Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Gutierrez. Now joined by our baseball insider, Buster Olney. Buster, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on, guys?
Let's start with umpires and what happened a couple of nights ago with it's another bad night at the office, this time for Laz Diaz. What, if anything, will happen, considering we've had some really high-profile mistakes and bad performances from the umpires in the postseason? Anything, or will it just be the same things we've seen over and over again? Umpires that were bad in the regular season, still getting postseason assignments, not being held accountable, and Major League Baseball putting their heads in the sands and just ignoring a problem that continues to piss a lot of people off.
I'm going to answer this on several different layers.
Thank
okay,
you.
First and foremost, I know Laz Diaz. He's a great guy. He loves his job. He cares about his job. And he had a terrible night the other night. Okay, 23 missed calls, which according to the StatCast data or the data from the pitch call or the strike zone data is the worst of any umpire in this postseason. I wish the umpires union had some sort of a system in place, as they do in the NFL, where the best umpires move forward from round to round. Right. Where, by the time you get to the end, you get the best of the best of the best. That's not how they do it. They do it in a rotational system. It means everybody gets a bite at the apple. That's not going to change. That's the relationship between Major League Baseball and the umpires union. And so that you're still going to see some umpires who you think of as not being great in the biggest games of the year. But I would say this. I have, made a bunch of calls, and I would, if you told me today, or if you told me in 6 months, or if you told me in a year that we suddenly got an announcement that there's an electronic strike zone in place, it wouldn't shock me. I think they're comfortable with the technology where it is. It's just a question of when they're going to push the button. And it's not a question of if they're going to push the button. It's a question of when they're going to push the button. Personally, I hope it's sooner rather than later, because I am so tired of the conversation every year and the variable in every game where, you get idiots like me out there saying, well, this umpire has this tendency. They tend to call more strikes in the inside corner than in the outside corner. I don't think those variables should be in play in some of these biggest games. And I think that we are not far at all from that point where you're going to see electronic strike zone.
I love what you're saying right now, and we had basically an argument with Mike Boddicker yesterday, and he said when it comes to that, he is done watching baseball and done being on our show, but I think he'll still come on the show. And to be honest, I think he'll still watch baseball, but he doesn't like it. Could you, based on your conversations with people around baseball, can you at least give us an idea of what you think the system would be like? What would that be for baseball fans to get used to? Tell me what you think actually might happen.
To put it simply in a term that we can all understand, because we all played wiffle ball in the backyard, it's like putting the lawn chair out and saying, if you hit the lawn chair, this part of the lawn chair, it's a strike. That's what we're going toward, okay? That's what the electronic strike zone is going to be. They've been tinkering with the technology for years. A couple of years ago, I asked someone in Major League Baseball, how close are you to being comfortable with the technology, and are you ready to implement it now, given the mistakes that we see in every game and every series? And obviously, some umpires are great at calling balls and strikes. Some are not. And the answer I got back was, well, we're not quite there. And my response to that was, well, let me ask you a question. If you don't believe in your electronic strike zone from data now, why do you use it to grade umpires?
Right.
They've used that data to grade umpires in recent years. Well, if that's where you are on it and you're comfortable having electronic strike zone set the standard, then it should be in place because they can do better. Look, Boddicker will remember that game Eric Gregg had in the 1997 playoffs. Marlins against the Braves, and Eric Gregg was the home plate umpire, and he decided that the strike zone was going to be much bigger for left-handed hitters than right-handed hitters. It completely changed that game. I covered it when I was at the New York Times. I think we saw the other night with Laz Diaz. And look, there were bad calls against both teams. It was bad for both sides, but I think that baseball players are ready to get past that. Players are gotten to the point where, you know, they're so locked in on every pitch of every plate appearance that they would rather have a situation where, there are more calls, ball strike calls called correctly, consistently, knowing that there are probably going to be some funky strike calls, as there are when you play with your lawn chair. I think players are ready for it. I think Major League Baseball is ready for it.
So the other part of this, Buster, what you said is not going to happen is about holding the umpires, you know, to a standard and then rewarding the good performers. It just seems insane to me. I mean, like all the stuff you said about Laz Diaz, great guy, loves his job, works really hard. Well, there's all kinds of baseball players that would fit under that category, but if they don't perform all season long, they don't get to go play in the postseason just because they've been around for 10 years. Oh, it's your turn. Yep. You get to go play in the playoffs. I mean, I think that's absurd, isn't it, that they would just – because the thing, like you said, Laz Diaz had a bad night. The sad part is that's not uncommon for him. He graded very poorly at calling balls and strikes all season long. So how could we act surprised when he has a bad night in a huge moment like the playoffs?
Right. And I think the comparison would be you and I have gotten to know through the years a lot of 4A-type pitchers, guys who are right in the cusp of the big leagues. They're not that great. You know, when they get to the big leagues, they have a 6 ERA. They don't, because of a rotation, get to start game one of the World Series. Right?
Right.
So you earn that spot. And it's always been a surprise to me, every year, because there are constant complaints about Angel Hernandez and Angel Hernandez this and Angel Hernandez that. And then every postseason, you see Angel Hernandez. So again, my personal interactions with him, other than the first time we talked, personal interactions with him have been terrific. But it's always been sort of mind-boggling to me to hear people in baseball say, Angel Hernandez isn't very good, and then to see him in the World Series. Or you hear Joe West is good on balls and strikes but not good on the bases. Well, in the NFL, why not put together the all-star team of umpires? You know, the guys that grade out the highest, guess what? You get to call the balls and strikes behind home plate. Guys who grade out best on the bases, guess what? You guys get to grade out that way. But that's not how the arrangement is between the union and MLB. And I got to be honest, complaining about that feels a little bit like, the arguments against the salary cap or for the salary cap. People are like, why isn't there a salary cap? And I'm like, that horse went out the barn 120 years ago. There's no point in worrying about it at this point unless the relationship between the union and Major League Baseball changes.
And Joe West, we will not have to deal with him any longer. He's moved on to a singing career, right? He retired.
Did. Based on the information that came out, and they have not announced the umpires for the World Series. But it sounded like Joe. What he got the wild card game. I think one of the wild card games behind home plate. And again, I don't know if Joe was the best umpire in terms of judging balls and strikes. But you wish in those two wild card games they said, okay, you're the valedictorian, you're the salutatorian of home plate umpires calling balls and strikes. You get those two games. I wish that was the system.
Buster, I don't know the story. What happened the first time you ran into Angel Hernandez?
There was a play, 1998. There was a play in Minneapolis in which there was a slide. A guy for the Twins slid, Corey Kotze slid over second base, took out Chuck Knobloch. There was a thought in the moment that Knobloch may have had his knee blown out. It was an old-fashioned Hal McRae-type slide. And so I knocked on the umpire's door in Minnesota to ask Angel about it. And just they opened the door and said, Angel, could I ask you about that call where you didn't call interference? And I got 12-letter words. And, and a no thank you.
We have Buster only on the line.
Personal. I want to make it absolutely clear. When these things happen, he doesn't know me from Adam. He just knows I'm a reporter, and I'm asking to, asking questions about a call, and it's not personal.
Heaven forbid an ump have to answer a question about a call he made. I mean, that's just
outrageous.
That is
a fair point. That is a fair point. But I just want to make it clear it was not personal.
All right, so I feel like Mike Boddicker has produced this segment for us today. Something else that irritates Mike Boddicker, makes him furious. He does not like openers. He does not like bullpen games. Even though it worked out, he was not happy when Urias instead of starting him, he came into the third inning because they decided to go with an opener. And bullpen games have been kind of a theme in this postseason. What's your reaction been to what we've seen?
The same as it is to people in front offices all around baseball. They hate it. They hate it. They understand the math behind it. They know that the numbers justify the decisions that these teams are making. They're seeing the great success of the Tampa Bay Rays, but they hate it as a product. If you are sitting on a couch saying, my God, these games are taking 4 hours and 15 minutes, and we get this parade of relievers, 90% of whom we've never heard of, going into this series. People in front offices share that sentiment, which is why, Mr. Boddicker, while he may be put off by baseball and the electronic strike zone, he will be heartened to hear there are changes coming when it comes to the parade of relievers.
Oh,
baseball hates it, and there will be new regulations put in place to manage against it. This is how it's going to happen, okay? There at some point, I believe, and this has not been negotiated and it's not fully vetted, but I'll explain why the union will go along with it. They typically have been the bottleneck on these changes. How it's going to happen is I think initially they're going to say each team can only have X number of pitchers on their roster. Say it's 12, say it's 13. That will gradually in the next couple of years go down. In other words, they understand all these teams now train this generation of pitchers to throw one inning and the starting pitchers to go 4 2/3, so they need time to go back the other way. Let's say next year the number is 13, okay? They are going to put in, along with that, administrative rules that will prevent the teams from ping-ponging players, five relievers up every day from the minor leagues. That will be along with that. There also is talk of tying the use of the starting pitchers to the designated hitter. So if you have you put a starter out there and you take them out of the game, and let's say you have an opener, you would lose the DH as the starting pitcher leaves the game. That incentivizes teams to keep the DH in place and to keep the starting pitcher in place. And so they're trying to work at it from multiple angles, but they're trying to get back to a point where they want to restore the preeminence of the starting pitchers, to give them more importance, to give the managers reason to keep them in the game, because they have the same complaints we all do. And here's why the union is invested in this, because they know that the starting pitchers are the money makers among the pitchers, among the players. They're the guys that drive up the salary ceilings all over the place. And so when they look around baseball, and I think they're only, what, seven starting pitchers had 190 or more innings this year. Seven in the whole sport. And baseball is behind the scenes losing its mind over this. The managers in the moment, Dave Roberts to the Dodgers and, Kevin Cash to the Rays, they will follow the math and they will say this makes sense. And I think they're right. In the moment, it makes sense. But in terms of selling a product, it is awful, and they recognize it, and there will be change.
All right, let's get to the great stuff, Buster Olney. Yeah. I can hear Mike Boddicker celebrating right now.
Outside I like
of
that, tying it to the DH. I
love
like
it.
That. Yeah, that's good.
And so, how quickly will we see that, you think? When will that happen?
I think in 2022.
Okay.
The first steps, and you remember, the collective bargaining agreement is being settled this winter. As I say, in a lot of these cases, like when you tell the players, look, we want you to stay in the box, and we want to keep the time down between pitches. You say that to hitters, and they look at you like you're a substitute teacher. What? I mean, well, why would I do that? And so you're not, you don't have the buy-in from the players on that. the buy-in from the players on this is clear. They, you know, you've got 125 free agent right-handed relievers set for the fall. Those guys are not pushing the market prices. The starting pitchers, you know, getting the Kevin Apiers, the Brett Saberhagens, reestablished and throwing seven innings. The Mike Bodickers, you know, throwing seven, 8 innings. That's where the union is invested in, which is why there's going to be change.
All right, Buster, let's talk about these two LCS matchups that are going on. The Astros, they beat the Red Sox 9-1. Framber Valdez, he had a fantastic start, 8 strong innings for the Astros, and they are now 1 win away from the World Series. Your thoughts on Astros and Red Sox and what happens in 6 and maybe Game 7?
A shocker to me. Absolute shocking to me how this series has played out, given what happened early in the series. You know, through the second inning of Game 4, guys, and I think these numbers are right, the 4 starting pitchers for the Astros had combined for 6 2/3 innings and 16 runs allowed, okay? They got blown out in Games 2 and 3. They were behind in Game 4, and yet they came back and found a way to win Game 4. And then last night, oh, my God, a starting pitcher throwing 8 innings, having a great speaker, getting tons of ground balls. Framber Valdez was outstanding last night. Like, the movement on his fastball was great. You could see the Red Sox hitters had nothing to do with it. I'm personally happy for Dusty Baker that he's going to have this moment. He, some point, should make a speech in Cooperstown. And look, I did a piece yesterday on ranking the elite shortstops in the free agent market, and I think the comments about Carlos Correa could be extended to Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve. While initially, when the sign stealing scandal broke out, there was a lot of disdain for those guys, there is now respect for how they played through it. You know, they didn't shrivel up and go away. Like I told you guys, I covered Roberto Alomar during the spitting incident, and in the aftermath, I think he kind of died on the vine after that. I think it sucked out his enthusiasm. Correa, Altuve, Bregman have demonstrated these are tough dudes, and they have played well in this series. You know, in Boston, guys screaming, or fans screaming stuff at him, and now they're just one win away from going back to a World Series for a third time in 5 years.
The other series, and look, let me tell you, I was totally wrong about what happened, where I thought was going to happen last night in Game 4 between the Braves and the Dodgers. I thought with the Dodgers down 2-0 and just a couple of innings away from being down 3-0, the Bellinger home run, the Mookie Betts hit, the you know, very inspirational comeback, I'm thinking, boy, now the Dodgers, hell, the Dodgers may just win 4 straight and put the Braves away. And then you look at the matchup. Julio Urias, the only 20-game winner in Major League Baseball. Here we go with a bullpen game for the Braves with Jesse Chavez getting the start. You could have got me to bet a dollar on the Braves last night, and I was just super impressed the way they took control of that game at the very beginning, put the Dodgers away, and now they're 1 win away from the World Series. What did you think of the Braves' bounce back after their very disappointing Game 3 loss?
I'm thinking that I'm hoping that Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager, gets Executive of the Year award in baseball, because the work that he did was phenomenal in adding. Adam Duvall had a great night last night. Eddie Rosario had a great night last night. You know, it's been Jocktober, Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, who, by the way, from what I understand, guys, who, you know, if assuming he tests negative for COVID, he'll be back on the roster if they make it to the World Series. To add those 4 outfielders during the season at low cost and have the impact that they've had, extraordinary. Look, I've made a lot of dumb picks in this postseason. I've gotten a lot wrong. I actually picked the Braves to beat the Dodgers. I just don't think the Dodgers are the same team they were last year, because their offense is not the same. The loss of Max Muncy has been enormous. That great, you know, those great plate appearances he rolls in there. Same with Justin Turner. He's been hurt in so much of this postseason. You can see he doesn't have the bat speed he normally does. And last night he suffers a hamstring injury, which pretty much takes him out of the rest of the postseason. their lineup is not as dynamic as it was last year, and that's just a fact. And I do think that while in moments, like in Game 5, when they threw the kitchen sink at the San Francisco Giants and finished with Max Scherzer on the mound, that opener strategy and the parade of relievers has caught up with them. Julio Urias didn't look as good last night. Scherzer has clearly been affected by having to pitch more. It eventually caught up with them in a year in which they've had less margin for error.
It was tough watching Justin Turner pull up on that hamstring because you knew as soon as that happened, like, he's not coming back. I mean, that those hamstring injuries don't heal very quickly. I mean, that was tough to watch.
Yeah, it was. And Dave Roberts announced after the game, it looks like a grade 2 strain, which means that's it. And so tonight, and actually this, it does potentially, if in fact the Dodgers are done, you know, if they get knocked out tonight or in Game 6, and we have to remember they came back from 3-1 down last year, Albert Pujols is probably going to play first base tonight. And this might be the last game of the career of one of the great Hall of Famers of all time. And part of me is glad that he potentially could have that last moment on the field, because you would assume at the end of this year, you know, he and his wife will have a conversation about whether or not it's time to retire.
Hey, Buster, before I let you go, you mentioned that column you wrote about MLB evaluators ranking the billion-dollar class of free agent shortstops. And to relate this to the Royals, we had Dayton Moore on the show last week. We were asking him about how does Nicky Lopez, who he campaigned heavily on the show for him to be the Gold Glove winner in the American League, he greatly improved at the plate. Love him moving forward in the Royals lineup. But you've got Nicky Lopez. You've got Aldoberto Mondesi, who, again, Dayton Moore is a big believer in and says he can play shortstop as well as anyone. And then you got this kid, Bobby Witt Jr., who's only the top prospect in all of baseball. Now, Buster, he's untradeable. No is the answer to Major League Baseball about Bobby Witt Jr., but there is a thought that, okay, you've got three guys who can play shortstop at a very high level. Could the Royals look to move one and try to fill a hole someplace else? There's a lot of shortstops, great shortstops available out there. Is this not a good time for the Royals to have this surplus? Do you think they should just stick with these guys and find, and that's what Dayton said, we'll find a way to get them all in the lineup? How do you think this affects the Royals and maybe if they wanted to go out there and make a deal?
I think it's a great opportunity for them. The one thing that surprised me during the reporting on this piece is the fact that there are so many teams that are going to be in the market looking for shortstop this winter, which is why I came up with that the realization that between Corey Seager and Carlos Correa and Trevor Story and Marcus Semien and Javier Baez, those five guys might get $1 billion between the five of them in total contracts, okay? Those five guys, because there's a higher number of teams looking for shortstops, middle infielders than what I think people realize. Not only do you have the usual suspects, the Yankees, Brian Cashman basically came out the other day, general manager, and said, we're going to be out in the market looking for shortstop. People are already assuming that either Seager or Carlos Correa are going to wind up with the Yankees. You've also got the Phillies. You've got the Tigers, who are expected to be aggressive in the market this winter, looking for a shortstop. A.J. Hinch used to manage Carlos Correa in Houston. You can connect the dots. The Texas Rangers are expected to be very aggressive. Trevor Story is from the Texas area or Dallas area. Maybe he's going to be a fit. The Seattle Mariners are expected to be an aggressive team looking for middle infielders. So there are a lot of teams looking for guys. And think of it like a game of musical chairs, okay, on the free agents. Somebody's going to miss. So if Javier Baez goes to the Mets and Seager goes to the Yankees and, Correa goes to the Tigers and Story goes to Story goes to the Rangers, and let's say Semien winds up with the Seattle Mariners, there are going to be other teams out there looking for shortstops, and that means that the Royals will have some leverage.
Could be very interesting, a very interesting trade market for the Royals this offseason. Buster, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Take care.
And Buster was on it today.
I mean,
well, he's on it every week.
He's got takes, terrific. He's got news, he's got information.
You trade one of those guys, Jake, yes or no?
No.
You're very, well, none of them.
None of them.
Wow. I think Dayton Moore might be trying to position Adalberto Mondesi for a trade with what he said on our show.
So you're keeping Mondesi?
Yeah.
Well, look at you. Look how you change. Look how you evolve. You're ready to run this guy out of town. Now you don't want to trade him. Yankees call, you don't pick up the phone?
I mean, I listen,
what's up, Cashman?
I listen to anybody, but I don't think there's... The value I think he is in your lineup isn't going to be reciprocal to what teams are going to be offering. I think everybody's going to try to lowball him. If that's the case.
You?
Yeah, I would, and that's why I wouldn't trade him.
But maybe you get a team that's desperate that misses out, like he said, misses out on one of these free agent shortstops, and we got to get someone dynamic, and they'll take a shot, and maybe they trade you someone that... And
if that's the case,
right.
If that's the case, yeah. If someone's going to offer me one of their top five prospects in their system.
What if someone calls you and said, boy, we'd love to have Nicky Lopez. We like this kid. We'd like to have him in our lineup. He's a Gold Glove quality shortstop. What if you could get a good package for Nicky Lopez?
It's crazy to even think about that, especially like you just rewind a year ago and to think about that comment. But now,
say it.
I think he's a glue guy.
Say it.
I say
you
no.
Okay, then. What do you say?
Well, all of it depends on what you get in your offer, right? What the other team's willing to offer.
Would you talk about it if there was?
I'm listening on everybody. I'm with Pounders on that.
Hey, I ain't listening on Bobby Witt Jr. You can back the hell off that microphone. We will mute you the rest of the day.
It's hard to envision a package deal that would be, that would make it worth trading Bobby Witt.
Ask me if I trade Bobby Witt Jr.
Would you trade?
No. Here's the phone. Here's how I respond. Hello.
Hey, this is Brian Cashman from the Yankees.
Hey,
how you
what's
doing,
going on? Too bad you guys lost in the wild card to your arch rivals.
Oh, you son of a gun.
I liked it. What do
hey,
you want?
Can I talk to JJ?
Hold on. This is JJ.
Hey, JJ, how's it going?
I'm pretty good.
All right. Hey, you're a lot nicer than that other guy I just talked to.
Well,
want to see if you'd want to talk about maybe trading some players, some prospects.
Oh, are you looking at?
I'm looking at some shortstops, maybe Bobby Witt Jr. Hello? Hello? Break it up there, JJ. You still there?
And back after this on WHB.